Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Village. Joining me is
John,
Glenn,
and Ryan.
And I'm apparently Greg, but forgot to tell you that.
And we're the awesome village.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, but you know, it's a village of a kind.
You're really not off to a good start, man.
Well, I mean, we were off last week.
We were.
You forgot how to do it?
Pretty much. You know, a lot of things
like
were going
a bike.
On. Yeah, Mother's Day happened. Things like that.
It did. Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Say hi to your mother for me.
Yeah. I got this mother sitting next to her right here.
Hey.
Oh.
Did y'all do anything special with your moms?
We ate some food.
My mom's only desire was to stay in her pajamas all day
then
and not do anything.
Gets.
So I was like,
that's what you get.
Peace out, Mom. Love you.
Yeah.
See, I always find it interesting for Mother's Day. Like, do you celebrate with people you know who are mothers? Or is it more important to celebrate with your actual, like, with your mother?
That's kind of a conversation we've been having a lot recently.
Well, what we did this past weekend, Mother's Day weekend, my wife always wants to do everything for my mom and her mom, not considering the fact that she is also a mother now. But we're going to see her mom. Her mom lives out of town. We're going to see her in 2 weeks, so we're going to do something then with her. And we went to the Oasis Resort in Biloxi, Glenn and Sandra.
Yeah,
and
we did.
We all went there. And therefore, I did a Mother's Day with my mom last weekend. So we just kind of just did it a weekend early. So
I got to tell you, I don't like this setup at all. That's a lot of stuff going on.
It made it easier. Nobody
just
missed
like,
out.
Well, you know what? I mean, this is just a suggestion. Why don't you just like do a thing where like all the moms just go to like a brunch somewhere and y'all just
take
the kids?
Well, what we did was we left the Oasis and had lunch with my mom. Then we went home and relaxed for like 3 or 4 hours and had dinner with Sandra's mom.
And my wife's mom lives 5 hours away.
So that wouldn't work.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Logistics.
Right? I'm just saying like
so
for your
you're
mom.
Not a fan of the Mother's Day sprawl.
I think what I'm going to start doing though, because you know, my mom's from England. If some of you might not know that. My mom is from England. English Mother's Day is actually in March. It's 4th. So we might just start celebrating English Mother's Day with my mom.
Why not?
Your mom would love that.
She would really love that.
She would love it. So.
But yeah, the Oasis, that's a cool place.
It is a cool place.
Need some little help in the restaurant.
Yeah.
It's a fun little water park resort. It used to be a mental hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you buried the lead on that one. It used to be a mental hospital?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a military mental
hospital. It used to be a military hospital. And then I think they moved a lot of the military hospital stuff out of it. It was just mental hospital, a part of it.
Do you go in the lazy river with a straitjacket?
I guess you could.
Yeah, because
it's not recommended.
You can stand up
if
you fall out. So
yeah.
It'll be
well, right. And maybe after his little procedure, John can just get out of the straitjacket now.
I'm open.
I notice you're not in your sling.
John
no, I don't have to wear it anymore. I can still wear it if I need to, but it's I don't have full range of mobility, but I can go that high with my arm.
Okay.
It's getting better. Still going to physical therapy.
And
thrice a week.
And I know you had a pretty good, what you call it, a cocktail to help with the pain.
I did, yeah.
It was a Bloody Mary, right?
I had a Bloody Mary in the morning, and then after lunch I had a Bushwhacker.
Yeah.
And then I went to bed with my
oxycodone. Like the 80s tag team?
Have you ever had a Bushwhacker?
Yes, I had a drink that was like the 80s wrestling tag team.
Like Luke and Butch.
Or the Daniel Stern.
We've had Bushwhackers before at like...
they're chocolate. They're like, it tastes kind of like a Frosty.
Yeah.
Where
at? At Lulu's.
Oh, I've never had a...
John's right. They taste like a Frosty. They're delicious.
They're good.
They're pretty delicious.
And it's a swim-up bar, so you can like be in the Lazy River, and the Lazy River goes right past the bar, so you can grab yourself a drink as you're going.
Nice.
Just tell them what room number you're in. They charge you your room bill.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's good. It's a cool little place. The kids liked it.
We got to bring them to the Beau Rivage Buffet.
They all knocked a year off of their lives because... 4 and under eat for free, and they're all 5, so they were all 4 when we went there.
Yeah, my son, I was telling John this earlier, we went somewhere, I forgot where, it was like children 10 and under, it was like a discount, and he's 11, so we're like, oh yeah, and he's 10, he's like, no I'm not, I'm 11. And
he doesn't know.
We're trying to save money.
He was sniffing glue in the parking lot.
Yeah, we took my mom and my mother-in-law to Vessel, which is this restaurant that's in an old church.
A converted church.
It's really beautiful on the inside. The menu, it's a little bit pricey, but really good food. And then we went to the Van Gogh experience. And my mom got very emotional going through all that.
Yeah, we went too. That was a good time.
Well, I told her, like, we're talking about it this morning, and I'd always, like, it's always been a goal of mine to, like, take her to, you know, museums in Europe and to see these things. And if I never get to do that, like, her getting to see these reproductions and this immersive experience, it was worth it.
Yeah.
Like, we've gotten to do that together. I got to see her be wowed by it.
I haven't gotten a chance to go to the one here. I went to the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam.
It's a cool experience. I mean, we went for our anniversary.
It'll be here until the end of June, but they may extend it to October, like they told me. There's also a Monet one coming up and a Magritte, which would be interesting.
And speaking of artists, I got to go see Garth Brooks at Tiger Stadium.
Did you guys
caused an earthquake.
Yeah, we did cause an earthquake. Well, I was around people that caused an earthquake.
So you were dragged.
I wasn't dragged. I was being supportive.
Would you have gone on your own?
Hell no.
So you were dragged.
I wasn't dragged. Yeah, but all right. So my mom and dad mentioned they were going. Sandra got very excited, and they said, "Do y'all want to go?" And she looked at me, and I'm like, "That's fine." I said, "I'm kind of in the same boat." Like John said, I do not like country music in the slightest. But Garth Brooks is fine.
Yeah, his is more tolerable. I agree with that.
I don't like a lot of the modern country music.
Well, it's not only that. Like, I agree with you guys. I'm not gonna like go out of my way to see Garth Brooks perform live, but I'm not gonna turn like down tickets. Then, I'd enjoy watching his concert.
But yeah. Then I just kept on thinking of like the first time I saw Taylor Swift and stuff like that. Like, if you put on a good show, it's fun. So,
and I've never been, but I've always heard he does put on a good show.
And he did. He put on a good show. The stage was shaped like a giant Echo Dot, and the whole thing was sponsored by Amazon Music, and it started with Alexa, play Calling Baton Rouge, and the whole stage started like glowing blue around the ring like it was a giant.
How many Chris Gaines songs did he play?
Zero. Not a Chris Gaines to be seen. But he did.
I heard he hired somebody.
What?
He hired some girl to be a roadie or something.
Oh yeah. She was from LSU too. Because when they did say that. But he did a couple of covers that were cool. Like for one of the encores, his wife came out and they did "Shallow" from "A Star Is Born." That was really cool. And he did "Night Moves" by Bob Seger. And and he did a pretty cool version of "Piano Man" by Billy Joel. But
Did he play a piano or guitar?
His guitar. But
well, that don't make no damn sense.
Well, he was doing this thing where he was singing songs he wanted like people to sing along to, and like he did "American Pie" and then he did "Piano Man." But I was telling the guys that one thing that he did that like I was kind of impressed with that I never really saw before. After the proper show ended and everyone left before the encore, Garth Brooks left and he was only gone for maybe about 30 seconds. And he came back out while his band was, getting water and relaxing. And he just had his guitar, and he was just talking to the people in, like, the first five rows. And he was just playing whatever songs they asked him to.
That's what my girlfriend said. She said that they were just holding up signs, and he was just playing the song.
Yeah. And like, he literally, he didn't stop. He performed for 2.5 hours straight, and he didn't stop. So, I mean, I'm not a big country music fan, but he put on a great show. It was loud as hell. Like, my watch kept on telling me that it was, like, dangerous levels.
Your eardrums have burst, Clenjamin.
That's right.
So it's a good thing the watch told you that, because what were we able to do about it? Nothing?
Not a damn
thing. If he had earplugs, he would have known.
Yeah.
Well, then he would have had them in anyway.
Yeah. my poor dad, he's he's deaf in one ear, and at one point, like, it was so loud that...
He's deaf in both now?
Yeah, he was trying to look for something to shove in his good ear, because he said it was starting to, like... get staticky, but just because it was so incredibly loud, it was insane. I mean, it was 100,000 people.
Right? Yeah.
Random question, but did you have any tinnitus after?
What?
Not really. I was fine.
What the hell is he talking about?
Tinnitus.
Ringing in the ear.
Oh, is that really what it's? I didn't know there was actually a word for it.
What the fuck is he talking about?
I didn't know.
The Baby Driver.
You never saw Baby Driver?
I didn't know that was actually from like.
Reality?
I didn't know that like you could. That's what it was called when you have that ringing from a concert.
But, he put on a very good show. I'd recommend, even if you're kind of just a minor.
I thought it was kind of interesting that the ticket prices were the same no matter where you sat.
No matter where you sat. That's right.
That's awesome.
It's like the communist concert.
The communist concert. How'd you know that was the name of the tour?
Garth Brooks, communist.
Well, speaking of potentially good shows, we're going to be talking a lot about... A whole bunch of TV we've missed out on.
He got me kind of excited. I thought we were going to talk about communism for a minute.
Do you want to talk about communism?
I don't really know enough about it. Although I did watch a show about...
nothing?
No, yeah. I didn't watch anything about communism.
Well, I mean, I remember a lot of Yakov Smirnoff's stand-up.
in communist Russia.
Well, speaking of communist Russia, the Pentaveret debuted on, is it Netflix?
Netflix,
yeah.
So John and Glenn have seen this.
I saw all of it. Glenn saw the first, what, two?
Three.
So this is a comedy show on Netflix. The Pentaveret, many of you may remember or may not remember.
This is kind of a deep cut.
In early in Mike Myers' career, he made a movie called So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Great movie, by the way.
Yes. And
I disagree.
Well, you're wrong.
Okay.
But he also played you know, a character named Charlie McKenzie, but he also played his Scottish father, Stuart McKenzie, who gets drunk and complains about this organization that he says he believes exists that is called the Pentaveret, and they're like the five most influential people in the world that control everything. And he named all the people that were in it back then, one of which was Colonel Sanders. And anyway, all these years later, Mike Myers has come up with this show about the Pentaveret. And Mike Myers plays...
At least eight characters.
At least eight characters in this show. Several of them are the members of the Pentaveret. Keegan-Michael Key is also in it. Ken Jeong is in it. I'm trying to think who else.
Jeremy Irons.
Debbie Mazar's in it. Jeremy Irons.
Rob Lowe. His whole thing was
Rob
really
Lowe
funny.
And Maria Menounos.
Yeah, Maria Menounos.
Are both in it.
As themselves.
And then the guy that's... I don't know what the actor's name is, but it's the guy that from the Sam Adams commercials that's your cousin from Boston. He plays the computer system that they have with the Boston accent. It's fine. It's a funny concept, and it's, you know, all of Mike Myers' characters, some of them are funny, and some of them are really not so much, and it's very hit or miss. I enjoyed it, I guess, but I mean, it's nothing that I'd be like, you gotta go watch this show. It's amazing.
That's kind of the feeling I got watching the trailer. I was like, hey, you know what? I'll pass.
It's only six episodes, and they're like 20-something minutes each. So, I mean, you can watch the whole thing in less than 3 hours.
Again, and I told John when I watched it, it's not the worst thing I've seen, but it's far from the best. Some of the characters, as John just said, are pretty funny. Some of them are not. That might be by design. I don't know. But, like, as the first three episodes went, like, I found myself grinning a lot, but I didn't find myself laughing a whole lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Some of the jokes are pretty clever. There's one kind of thing, like, right when they get into America, they get into a fight at a pool hall, and... It's a very weird scene where they start complaining about the language, and then, like, the CEO of Netflix comes up and apologizes and re-edits it, and it's, like, way worse.
You don't realize it because there's so many curse words in it that everything that's not curse words can be taken as sexual innuendo, so when they take them all out, it's just really graphic sexual innuendo.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny.
That was kind of clever.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, I told Glenn, I feel like in the movies that Mike Myers does where he goes in makeup and plays these other characters. I think of the three Austin Powers movies and then The Love Guru. It's not as good as the first two Austin Powers movies, but it's better than Goldmember, and it's way better than Love Guru.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the next coming of Wayne's World.
No.
But
like I said, I mean, it's harmless.
I mean, there's a couple of kind of inside jokes, because one of the members of the Pentaveret, it's an agent for Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
And apparently Mike Myers actually directed a documentary about that guy, and he plays him. And that's one that's not really that funny, but I mean, I think watching the way he acts is probably exactly like this guy was, since Mike Myers did a...
And there's another member of the group that's... It's very clearly Rupert Murdoch. He's an Australian media mogul. I mean, it's very clearly Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
And there's another one that I think is kind of funny, and he's this like Russian oligarch kind of thing that's very much like a Rasputin kind of character. And he's pretty funny in it.
But yeah, it's fine. It's on Netflix. If you want to watch it, great. If you want to skip it, that's fine too.
I feel like I was just presently surprised because I was really expecting it to be awful. I was expecting another Love Guru.
You guys convinced me not to watch it, just so you know.
Okay.
I thought the Scottish father from So I Married an Axe Murderer would show up since that was the genesis of the idea for the show.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was nice to see Mike Myers back.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe this will lead to Mike Myers' renaissance.
Yeah.
Maybe
he was good in
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was just a little
and
bit
Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, Inglourious. But I mean, there has been talk about maybe doing another Wayne's World movie. I don't know if they will. I think
I heard they're talking about doing another Austin Powers.
Yeah. Hopefully they do it right and make it better than
Goldmember. Their mistake was they did not make Austin and the primary character. It turned to Dr. Evil, then it became like all of them.
Yeah.
It was too much.
it was like almost too much when they added Fat Bastard, and then when it went to Gold Member and all the other characters were all still in it, it was just, it got to be too much.
Oh, I forgot about the Cat in the Hat, and that was a piece of shit.
That was bad.
That was bad.
But
so I'm hearing that we need to do a win loss record for Mike Myers.
Yeah,
that'd be an interesting one.
He'd be on the border. I don't know if he'd have an overall win percentage.
That's the interesting part. Well, a show that I've now seen, so, and you guys have too, is Severance. I've watched the full season. And boy, were you guys right about that show.
Yeah.
You smug motherfucker. I'm not insulting, and that's a quote.
No, yeah, that's a quote from the show.
Are you in agreement with me that we need a spinoff of John Turturro and Christopher Walken just doing
100%.
Just doing anything together?
Yeah.
But this is one of those things where, like, I got to the end of the show. I agree with Ryan that this is going to win some awards. If it doesn't, something's wrong. But I got to the end of the series, and I'm like, okay, well, we need season two now.
Yeah.
It's incredibly well put together, and a good blend of comedy and drama, and it's so weird.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's that weird, that thing where it's like, it's familiar, but it's exaggerated to a point where you're like, yeah, this is, I can kind of see what they're doing and how this is based off of reality, but damn if this doesn't make me feel bad about that reality.
And I will say something, I follow Ben Stiller on Twitter, and it seems like whenever anyone mentions anything about Severance and they tag it, he either likes it or responds to it. Like, constantly.
I'm going to try that.
We should do that from the podcast Twitter.
So Adam Scott is in this. Did you guys see? I didn't see that thing that happened a few years ago with Mark Hamill.
With Mark Hamill.
You had not seen that?
No.
Was it Jimmy Kimmel?
No, it was the Kristen.
Yeah, the Kristen Bell was hosting Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel.
Okay. Was
that was so cool.
Yeah.
He looked like he was going to cry.
He very nearly did.
I would.
I mean, we would have, but I mean, you could tell he was a legit Star Wars fan. Yeah. I mean, that you could just see it in his eyes. And I've always liked Adam Scott. He's just like, he seems like the kind of dude you'd want to hang out with.
Step Brothers was on the E channel the other day for whatever reason, and some of the edits were hilarious in that.
Yeah,
he could sing Ha.
That scene was all pretty much the same. The one that I told Glenn that really made me laugh is, you know when Will Ferrell yells, "I'm going upstairs, I'm going to put my nuts on your drum set." They change it to, it's not even Will Ferrell's voice, it's some other person's voice saying, "I'm going to go upstairs and I'm going to put my buttocks on your drum set." And I was like, what the fuck? They couldn't even get Will Ferrell to dub it over.
In the buttocks.
Do you get the feeling from Severance, though, like, Lost, like, when I was watching Lost, I was like, are they going to answer these questions? But with Severance, I feel like I have more trust that Severance is going to give me the answers.
It's not just that. Like, this is one of those shows, and we talk a lot about Showtime, where they blow up the show at the end of the season. They've revealed enough of the mysteries in this to satisfy people.
Yeah, exactly.
But it opens up more questions, and that's what a good show that's well planned out will do.
Plus, the reason that you didn't have as much trust for Lost is because Lost went on for how many seasons was it?
Five? Oh, Jesus. Six.
And like, seven, when it got to the sixth season, there were still questions from the first season they hadn't answered yet.
True.
Well, and again, part
so,
of
I mean, that, this has only been one season. So
part of that was the planning for that show, too, had been they really wanted to do like four or maybe five seasons, and they kind of stretched it out a bit.
Well, and plus you're dealing with a streaming show versus a network show. I mean, Lost, they had, at those first three seasons, they had to do 24 episodes a season.
Yeah.
That was another thing that was frustrating. It was too much.
Lost was much easier to binge, because I remember I didn't start watching Lost when it came out.
Me
I started
neither.
After the third season.
Yeah.
So I binged the first three seasons, and then when it came out, I was like, oh my God, I can't
It may
it
be
like
one
this.
Of the best bingeable shows.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how people went week to week. Especially in the beginning, when it was like really, really good.
Yeah.
Well, The Offer has been a show that we've been, you know, talking about for a while, and it's finally debuted, and we're at, what, four episodes in
four
now?
Four episodes of that, yeah.
I've seen three of them.
I've seen two.
I've seen all four.
I've seen shit.
Oh.
It's excellent.
Well, John, it's on Paramount Plus. I haven't logged in yet.
Well, John, take us through a little bit of the plot.
So this is the making of it's a show, not a documentary, a scripted show about the making of The Godfather and all the obstacles they went through to get the actors, to get locations, to get funding, to get for everything in this, and it's all based on the guy that produced it, whose name is Albert Ruddy.
It's based on a book he wrote.
Yeah, and it's about his experience.
The creator of Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah, creator of Hogan's Heroes. And Miles Teller plays him. And I started to feel like Miles Teller was starting to just play Miles Teller and everything, and he's not like that in this at all.
No, this is an incredibly well-cast show.
It is.
And especially considering Miles Teller kind of was a very last-minute replacement, because was it Armie Hammer?
I think it was supposed to be Armie Hammer.
And
I believe.
Yeah, and
I'm kind of glad it fell the way it did then.
Yeah. Although, I think Armie Hammer, before the whole cannibalism thing, he probably would have done well with this just because of his kind of upbringing around.
He would have did fine, but like I find Miles Teller adds an everyman quality to this that Armie Hammer would have been too.
I agree. Armie Hammer's just, he's too big.
Yeah.
But Miles Teller's an asshole.
Yeah.
He's a good actor.
He's a good actor. And Matthew Good plays the famous Hollywood producer Robert Evans, and he's excellent.
Yeah, did you watch that thing that I sent you with Bob Odenkirk doing his Robert Evans as God?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Robert Evans, there used to be a show on Comedy Central that was an animated show about Robert Evans. Right. It was really funny. And it was, and Slash was in it.
Right. Well, all right, so Robert Evans wrote an autobiography called, was it The Kid Stays in the Picture?
Yeah.
And it kind of became a cult thing for the audiobook that Robert Evans read himself.
Yeah.
Because that voice is something
else. And it was like, they based that cartoon, I think, on the way he read that audiobook.
And like, if you haven't, the best way I could describe the way Robert Evans spoke is like, he sounds like someone doing an impression of Cary Grant, almost.
Yeah, that's a
He doesn't even really sound like Cary Grant. He sounds like somebody doing an impression, like, he sounds like Dana Carvey or somebody doing an impression of Cary Grant.
It's a radio voice, yeah. Too.
And he's so good in it. And they got, Dan Fogler plays Francis Ford Coppola.
He impressed me.
Excellent.
And Giovanni Ribisi plays
Giovanni Ribisi.
He plays Joe Colombo, like the New York mob boss.
Can he act?
Giovanni Ribisi?
So, all right, so I kind of told John, like, I really enjoyed the show. I was struggling with his character for the first episode. The second one, he kind of toned it down a little because when I looked it up, the way that they made him up, he looks a lot like Joe Colombo. But the way he talked was very much like, I thought it was too, a little on the nose because he was pretty much doing I thought he was doing a Vito Corleone impression from The Godfather. The second episode, he kind of tones it down a little, so it's better. And it's not even really a big complaint. It's just sort of like, when he started, I'm like, okay, I hope this doesn't get annoying. Which it didn't.
So is it good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
good. The show's very good.
I had no idea, like, how much the Italian-American community did not want that movie to be made.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. I mean, you don't remember from The Sopranos, they talked about how much they went into a storyline.
I remember them kind of just quoting The Godfather and talking about
They did, but I remember, like, Melfi and her community of Italian-American friends, like, they talked about how much the anti-Italian defamation.
And I'd always heard about the story with Mario Puzo getting in the fight with Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. And I didn't realize Mario Puzo just wrote this book like a couple of years before they started making the movie.
Right.
And he was involved with the actual making of the movie. I don't know.
Which was a big deal when that happened, apparently.
Yeah.
Cool. But who else is in it? Colin Hanks?
Colin Hanks is in it, yeah.
I'm surprised he's not a bigger star. Like, he's been doing like tiny roles for his whole career.
There's a guy in it who plays the guy that owns Paramount.
Vern Gorman.
Yeah, I didn't even know what the guy's name is, but he's been in a ton of stuff, and he usually plays really creepy.
He was in Torchwood, which is a Doctor Who spinoff.
He was in Dark Knight Rises, and he's been in a bunch of other stuff.
Pacific Rim.
It's a weird dude.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of different things.
He's really good in it.
Yeah.
Is his character. And Juno Temple.
He's awesome in everything.
Yeah.
Always excited to see Paul McCrane and things.
Yeah.
Cool. So Paramount Plus, if you want to check
it out. Yeah, it's good. I really enjoy it. When it came out the other day, I was like ready to watch it that morning when it came out.
Well, that's one of your favorite movies of all time, isn't it?
It is.
Well, speaking of CD deals, Better Call Saul's final season has premiered, and we are 4 episodes, I think, as of tonight, into it. John, you mentioned like you hadn't kind of caught up.
No, I'm about a season or two behind, I think.
I was a season behind, and I caught. They're all on Netflix up through season 5. The way season 5 ended, I was like, oh, good, I'm ready to go for season 6. This is crazy. Everything's coming to a head. And I'm a little bit worried for some characters, but they've paid off a lot of things that have been set up since the beginning of Better Call Saul, but also things that we're kind of leading into with Breaking Bad. And as the show's catching up, I'm kind of curious. I know that this season you're going to see Jesse and Walt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so this whole series is a prequel?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of both. A prequel and a sequel, because there's stuff with the black and white stuff. Yeah,
to like what he's up to.
But it's the majority of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is following. The thing is, I can't say much without ruining if you haven't seen anything. But like, this season is where he's fully Saul.
Oh, cool.
And you kind of see him becoming kind of a friend of the cartel. There's a lot of the guy who played Jack Duquesne in the Hawkeye.
Oh yeah,
limited
yeah.
series. He's in it as a Salamanca.
Okay.
And he was in the previous season, and he's kind of starting off in this season. But you'll man, just I can't say enough. The actor who plays Nacho Vargas.
Oh yeah, he's good.
Phenomenal actor. In this entire series, like, there's moments where I think I might like this sometimes better than Breaking Bad.
I always loved him in what? Orphan Black.
Whoa.
He was so good in Orphan Black.
Whoa. He really was.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Honestly, I have not watched the last couple seasons, whoa. But I mean...
All right, I get what Greg's saying. Like, I haven't... I'm probably about 2 seasons behind, but I would say the first 2 seasons of Better Call Saul are better than the first 2 seasons
correct.
Of Breaking Bad.
I would agree completely.
I don't know if it gets to the point where Breaking Bad was.
No, that's the thing. I can't tell you... there are moments where I'm like, oh, wow.
So you're seeing the potential, because Breaking Bad really, like, got better as it went on.
It did. And Breaking Bad, I thought it was like, it was pretty good when it started, and then it got excellent. You know, the beginning started off really, really good on the show.
And man. It's maintained that. So yeah. The thing is, like, the humor that's in this series, they play a lot of that. It's kind of like you see in Breaking Bad, Walt slowly turn to a villain. This is someone who has, like, he doesn't start off as Saul. He starts off as Jimmy McGill. And it's his journey to get, you know, kind of where he's the guy you meet in Breaking Bad. And it's there are moments where I'm just like, man, but like, for Bob Odenkirk to kind of flourish, like, I've seen, I didn't finish Nobody yet. I watched.
Oh, that's a good movie.
But it, yeah.
It's a bit of a, that's a movie that saved his life.
Bit of a John Wick ripoff, but it's still good.
Yeah, it's just, go out and get caught up and watch it. It's a phenomenal show.
Sweet.
Also, we just ended Moon Knight's little debut season. And I know that I've watched it.
I have.
Oh, so have I?
My son gave it a roaring review. He said it was very good. I didn't see a single second of this show.
You'd like it.
You really would.
I didn't I'm burnt out on it. That's my whole thing. And you guys love Marvel probably more than I do. I like Marvel, but it doesn't stop.
Well, this one,
it's like the mail.
Well, this one I will say, like,
and I'm just
this one
out.
This one doesn't have any real connections other than a couple of minor things.
Well, I didn't watch Hawkeye because it didn't seem like a show that...
Watch that during Christmas.
Well, I heard that, like, it's sort of like a standalone thing. I don't think it advanced any stories. But then I heard Moon Knight...
kind of that way?
Well, I heard I mean, that could be a character we see going forward.
Could be.
I wouldn't be surprised if Moon Knight popped up in, a sequel to The Eternals.
Well, here's the thing with what you're saying, though, Ryan. Like, Feige's kind of gone on record as saying there's no real big plan like they had for, like, Endgame and Infinity War. For this little phase of Marvel right now, they're still kind of like there's a possibility of Kang being.
He was at a retreat, during CinemaCon, saying they were planning out the next 10 years.
Yeah, so it's right now. There's nothing that really gels. They're kind of like throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. And we'll talk about that when we talk about movies. But you know, I can kind of there's threads in all of this stuff that they're laying out there. The only big drawback I see, and we'll talk about this again when we talk about Doctor Strange, but like. Some of the stuff now it's required watching before you go into it, whereas the first phase, that first 10-year plan, you can kind of get away with watching bits and pieces of it. Moon Knight's one of those shows that, this is why I think you'll like it, where you don't necessarily have to watch much
anything.
And it's just incredibly enjoyable. And Oscar Isaac is friggin' awesome.
I've never seen him better.
What?
Oscar Isaac.
Yeah,
I've never seen him better.
He's amazing in this show.
You were talking about Poe Dameron, right?
Yeah.
Well, of course. He is so good as...
How could he be better than when he was Poe Dameron?
All right, so...
Moon Knight.
Yeah, so he plays this character with these multiple personalities. And the way that Oscar Isaac does it, like, between Mark and Steven, like, it's almost like his whole body changes. Like, when he talks... Not only does he have a British accent with one and an American with the other, but the way he walks...
He's, kind of hunched over,
yeah,
Steven.
Yeah, just his whole... Just the way his body is.
He's meeker as Steven.
Yeah, it's just... It's completely different... And without giving anything away, it's a 6-episode series. The 5th episode, he goes through emotions that, like, it was hard to watch at points. It was just so heartbreaking, some of the stuff. And Oscar Isaac, I was like...
He's a good actor.
This guy, I mean, he was... I didn't know he had it in him.
And let me say, like, Ethan Hawke as probably one of the more chill villains.
Yeah.
Like, he was really good in the series.
And some fun voice work from F. Murray Abraham. Mm-hmm. But and then is it May Calamway, the one that played Layla? She's
awesome.
Yeah, she was very good. But this show I thought was just very unique, very different. And like Greg just said, you don't need to see anything Marvel to watch this and enjoy it.
Cool.
There are only murderers in the building, or is it murders?
No,
it's only murders in the building.
There we go.
Called.
John, this is a show I've kind of wanted to watch for a
John while. Told me to watch it, and I do what he tells.
He's like the Adams family.
Because he's the leader. And he said, Ryan, you watch this show on Hulu.
Also told you to watch Moon Knight. You didn't watch that shit.
Well,
he also
I'm
told
going...
you to watch Doctor Who.
I did.
Yeah, I don't listen to that shit. That's because he's biased, because he's British. So
Greg,
I can't...
Greg got me to watch Doctor Who.
Well, Greg's a nerd.
I love his shifting reality.
I had saw a trailer for this, and you know what's weird? Like, when I see trailers for shows where I'm sort of on the fence, I wait to hear feedback. Nobody was talking about this show until you had told me you saw it, and I was like, okay, well, then I'll give it a try.
It got nominated for, like, a bunch of Emmys and
Did
stuff.
It really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm 3 episodes into it. I'll say this. It's not for everybody.
No.
It's that type of, not Christopher Guest humor, but...
It's Steve Martin and Martin Short
it's
type humor.
That, yeah.
And I know... A lot of, I feel like there's Steve Martin. I think everybody kind of likes Steve Martin for the most part. But Martin Short, people either love Martin Short or hate Martin
and
Short.
And I will say this. There are a couple scenes, at least in the first 3 episodes, where I'm really intrigued. I would love to see a straight dramatic role for Martin Short. I think he would be really good.
Did I keep saying Martin Sheen just now?
No, you said Martin
Short. Did I say Short? Okay.
Like that scene where he goes to talk to his son to ask for money.
Yeah.
Like, you could see he's got some dramatic acting chops that he does never use. I would love to see a specific role for him in a drama.
You don't think he was very dramatic in Inner Space when he thought he was possessed?
I'm possessed! I've always thought of him as being very funny. The show is basically about there's a murder in this building in New York where all these people live, their apartment, and the night of the murder, none of them are allowed to go upstairs. So they're all like hanging out in like a cafe.
It's like right across the street.
Yeah, all the residents are just waiting in this cafe, and as it turns out, 3 of them just happen to be eager to listen to the new episode of this podcast, their favorite podcast, and they, through them all walking around, they realize that they're all listening to the same podcast.
Yeah.
So they spend the night together, sort of talking about it, and they sort of become friends, and then Martin Short. Now you got me saying Martin Sheen. Martin Short comes up with the idea that they should do a podcast about this murder.
That just happened in their building.
And try and investigate it because they actually ran into the guy who was murdered earlier in the night. And from what I've seen in the first 3 episodes, a lot of hijinks. There's a very funny scene about with a frozen cat in a freezer that had me kind of laughing. I really like Martin Short in this a lot.
Yeah.
I like him better than Steve Martin. Selena Gomez is just
Steve Martin's more of the straight man than
he's not a wild and crazy guy.
No.
I'm enjoying it. Like I'm going to finish
it. We finished it and I liked it and I'm glad it does end like a little bit of a cliffhanger, but we just watched it. The new season comes out in like 2 months.
Nice.
So it's But it's on Hulu and it's 8 episodes, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm 3 in. They're like 25-minute episodes.
Yeah, they're not super long.
Well, let's sort of get a little bit more serious as far as murders go and talk a little bit about Tokyo Vice.
I only watched the first episode of this.
I watched 3.
I finished it.
I finished it too.
So, this is a HBO Max series. I hope to be a series. So this is this first season. It's been 8 episodes. This is a kind of a thriller developed by Michael Mann. In fact, he directed the pilot. It stars Ansel Elgort and Ken Watanabe, among others, and it's kind of based on a real guy named Jake Adelstein, and he kind of rebelled from his family and moved to Tokyo to become a journalist, and he ended up becoming the first non-Japanese person to write at this very prestigious newspaper in Tokyo, and he had the crime beat, which things are kind of different in Tokyo than here, where it seems like the reporters are much more involved with the detectives over there. Like
and the detectives kind of tell them what they're allowed to write.
Right. Yeah. It's a lot different than it is here, and again, that's kind of the interesting thing about this show is just the different cultures. Not saying one's better than the other; they're just different, and just the way that Jake. And, you know, is perceived by some of these people being a very tall white person, white American.
The Gaijin, as they call
him. Yeah, they keep calling
him.
Yeah, Gaijin. And the way he, you know, runs in with these different detectives and the Yakuza. And
yeah.
It's It's very good. It's very gritty. Like, yeah. He could definitely... Like, Michael Mann's fingerprints are all over this. Yeah. Even though he developed it and directed the first episode. I mean, his fingerprints are all over this.
How many episodes is it?
Eight.
Eight.
So, does it end with a conclusion?
Not at all.
No.
Because I was telling John, I wondered if, like maybe this is a series kind of like True Detective, where it's like, this is Tokyo Vice, and then there's like New York Vice or something.
The main reason I'm worried that it's not... I think it's doing well, so I think they're... Yeah, hopefully they will be. Will. But every little storyline ends with a little cliffhanger, and you've seen the first episode. You know how they're... It's like he and Ken Watanabe are like putting on the vest, and they're going up to some meeting,
right, yeah.
And then it says 2 years earlier, yep. Or whatever. It doesn't even get to that part where they're going up to what I mean.
Bullshit.
So, yeah.
But, yeah, I kind of got obsessed with the show. Like, I did really too. Enjoyed it. Ansel Elgort's good. There's an actress named Rachel Keller, which she's another kind of expat American, yeah, that lives in Tokyo that's trying to open up her own brothel, I guess.
It's weird. It's not their... It's hard to even describe. Because I read about them. They're actually not brothels because there is no like sex or nudity, right, involved in it. But it's these places where these like rich businessmen can go and they can just pay for someone's company. Kind of like a geisha. But it's just, you know, they just come and sit down with them and have conversation with them and pour their champagne for them. And...
What a waste of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
who the hell would pay for that? That's the dumbest shit I've ever heard. You're paying someone to come on a date for you to pay more? That's bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, they pay us to talk to you, so.
Do they? No one pays you to do this.
Crystal's been doing it for a while now.
Yeah.
Oh, whatever.
But,
she gave us baked goods earlier.
She did.
You didn't even know they were for you.
But, yeah, no, Ansel Elgort, he's really great. Ken Watanabe, he's good.
Ansel Elgort needs to eat something.
He's just really tall.
Yeah, and he's so skinny.
Which is probably just because he's just tall and lanky. I mean, to me, though, the breakout in the show, there's an actor, his name is Shao Kasumatsu, which he plays a character named Sato. He does not suck the air out of
Okinawa.
But his character's kind of he gets into organized crime by his brother, and he's very...
Well, he is really good in this so far.
Yeah, and like, he's very kind of low-key. Like, it doesn't seem like he really wants to do it. And
was he in the first episode?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one... I think Jake
he's
sees
the one
him.
He goes and he's in the bathroom, and he makes comment about his tattoo, yeah, and he's, like, changing the dressing on his tattoo.
Yeah, he's just got a fresh tattoo. He becomes a very main character, okay, of the show. And that actor is amazing.
So, did this ever come on HBO, or was it just straight to the streaming service?
It was a Max original.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I never saw any promote, like, I didn't see it on HBO.
Yeah, but, yeah, I sincerely hope that this gets picked up for second season. I think it will, because I believe, as far as HBO Max originals, it's doing fairly well. But, yeah, I just think this show's amazing.
Yeah.
And we'll ramp up the murder factor a little bit more and talk about the Conversations with the Killer John Wayne Gacy tapes.
Yeah.
I don't think the title it really does it. I mean, they do have recordings of him talking, but that's not really what the show's about. It really just goes through what he did. And
what was the second we had the one with
they're calling it that because of the Ted Bundy tapes.
Oh, you see, in that one I couldn't get into.
And I think it's a Netflix like series. It's whoever tapes.
Well, when you click on it, it doesn't say season one or two. It must be like the Narcos thing.
No, it's like a separate like.
But
it's like a series of things.
I'm realizing that I didn't know very much about these serial killers.
Oh, I didn't. See, this is the thing. I knew like John Wayne Gacy killed some dudes. That there, he, you know, dressed as a clown. There was some homosexual like overtones.
Right.
I didn't know how many people he killed.
And I honestly, I mean, I didn't really. All I knew was the clown thing. And I mean, I always just kind of in my head thought he was some kind of like weirdo that dressed up as a clown for kids' birthday parties or something. And it turned out that he was like killing people or whatever.
No, to know that he had like that much influence in the Democratic Party in Chicago, and all the stuff that happened with him in like in Indiana.
Yeah.
And to think that, like, it's a situation where he made a mistake and that's how he was found out.
Yeah.
And his arrogance is sort of like, well, I'm going to get out of this, too. It's like, well, I could tell you all about it and I'm going to get out of it.
Because, I mean, most serial – not I mean, I say most, but the majority, I think, of, like, serial killers are usually kind of, like, loner types that are, you know, they do that sort of thing. I mean, Ted Bundy was a little more out there because he was kind of like a ladies' man kind of thing, and that was his old deal. But yeah, I mean, I had no idea that – John Wayne Gacy, he got convicted. It was like 30, 33, 31, somewhere around there.
Still haven't identified all of his victims.
Yeah. But this was what was it?
Four episodes.
Four episodes. And it was excellent. I watched it all, I think,
Yeah, in a row. I watched it pretty quickly. It was good.
Well, they do that thing where, like, when one episode ends, you're like, well, I gotta watch the next.
Because they do a good job of ending each one with, like, a little bit of a cliffhanger. Yeah. But, yeah, it was very interesting.
Yeah, Netflix continuing its fine tradition of...
Yeah.
Of serial killer documentaries.
I know y'all, speaking of the documentaries, I know y'all already watched it, but Karen and I did watch the Bad Vegan, by the way. That was crazy.
So are you with me or with Greg? Because I think that bitch is a lying psychopath.
I think she's lying about a lot of it, but I mean, I understand that she probably did get duped into it, but I think there had to have been a point where she realized that.
Yeah, she's trying to claim through the whole point, whole thing, that she didn't know what was going on.
I get it from the beginning, maybe not.
Maybe, but, so, yeah.
But, yeah.
Like, when the restaurant starts to fall apart and people aren't getting paid, and, you know, she's obviously not going to get her dog reincarnated or whatever the hell that was about.
Not reincarnated, just or make it never, immortal.
Yeah, immortal, sorry.
See, but this is my thing, and this will be a little bit, like, the concept of, like, if you do this, you'll get eternal life, and the dog will get eternal life, and all that kind of stuff. We're criticizing it because it's from the point of view of the psychopath, and we know all this stuff, but, like, that's what most religions promise. And yeah. It's kind of that same cult mentality that you can get kind of duped into it. Like, again, I'm with you guys that at a certain point she's saving face right now, and the evidence of that is at the end when she's talking to him. And she's like, you know, there's still some charm that he and some sway that he has over her. So I don't think she's completely like that. Stockholm syndrome still exists with her.
It still
but
makes
I think
me...
at the beginning, then yeah, it's like at the beginning of it, she got roped in, and now that you've gone this far, I guess I'll go a little bit further.
You know, the funny thing, this show probably only got made because of how she got caught with the Domino's pizza, where they thought that she was a vegan ordering a Domino's pizza, which is, I think, that was all the headlines that they came out with.
Yeah.
Well,
chicken isn't vegan.
No. Neither is cheese.
the vegan police will show up.
Or some of the crust.
Lose your vegan powers.
Well, a person who doesn't have vegan powers is Captain Picard. And season 2 has ended with Picard.
That's right.
I know you were very positive at the beginning of the season. How do you feel now that the whole show is...
All right, so I thought the season 2 started, like... fantastic, the first maybe 3 or 4 episodes. Then I think it kind of got bogged down a little in maybe 1 or 2 plot lines than were necessary. Maybe.
Sorry, guys, that was Ryan's vibrator.
No, that was an Amber Alert.
Oh, your vibrator does Amber Alerts?
Sometimes.
I didn't get an Amber Alert on my phone.
Well, that's because maybe you got Apple products. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought that the kind of the middle of the season wasn't. It was still good. I was enjoying it, but I think that they might have had 1 or 2 more plot lines that were necessary.
I would agree with you because it almost seems like they were like, this is the threat. No, this is the threat.
And then, like, the whole thing with, like, Q kind of went away for a while, and it was more about the Borg, and that was the first season kind of thing, which I was still enjoying, but it definitely stuck the landing, and
yeah.
I will say that. The last 2 episodes were very good. The last episode especially was very good. So, I mean, I think the majority of the show, I would say, worked. There was a little bit in the middle where I thought they were kind of spinning their wheels a little, but then it ended strong. So I don't really have that many complaints.
How do you think this makes you feel going into season 3? What possibilities might
I'm intrigued
exist?
With season 3 because, you know, we were kind of when they announced, you know, the entire next-gen cast coming back, I was kind of wondering what that was going to mean to the cast of Picard, and the way that season 2 ended without giving away any spoilers. They're not all going to be there, but some of them will be, and it's going to be very interesting to see the ones that are still around interact with some of our old favorites from Next Gen. And also the finale, without again giving anything away, there was an appearance by a character that I wasn't expecting that made me, I was grinning from ear to ear. But the way what they did with this particular character kind of made sense with the some of the things they set up to tie some of the stuff from the original series in with these kind of there's an episode in the original series that featured a character named Gary Seven, and I think it was originally meant to be kind of a backdoor pilot that Gene Roddenberry was doing about these agents that were sent to Earth to like protect and make sure a specific event would happen or protect something, and kind of like a time version of Men in Black, and it feature this show features one of these kind of agents without giving too much away, and they tied that into kind of another plot from the Next Gen, and I thought it was very clever because it made sense more. It didn't seem like that much of a reach. So season two, I thought it was an improvement on season one. It still wasn't perfect, but it was very enjoyable. And like I said, it started strong and it ended very strong. So
I don't know if you saw today, but they released a behind the scenes of them filming season three.
On a ship.
On a ship. And yeah. Someone said something about, the Stargazer. And he's like, that's not the Stargazer. Do you think we're getting to see Enterprise F?
I don't know. Or do they do like...
Or maybe the Titan.
Maybe the Titan, or maybe they pull... Because they referenced a lot of the old movies. Like, this one referenced Star Trek IV a lot, which made sense. I wonder if they referenced something from one of the movies where they bring the Enterprise E out of mothballs kind of thing. Because the little trailer, they were like one last adventure kind of thing. So, there's a lot of things they can do, so... I would love to see an Enterprise, but then again, the Titan would be cool. I mean, I'm just excited to see where, because so far in Picard, we've seen Picard. We know where Riker and Troy are. We know a little bit about kind of what Geordi was doing from some of the expanded stuff, because he was apparently on Mars, like he was stationed on Mars during the revolt. But he was off planet, so that's why he's still alive. But like Beverly and Worf and all them, like, I'd love to know what they're up to. So it's gonna be cool to see, you know, the whole band back together.
Well, one series ends and another begins. We got the premiere of Star Trek: Strange New Worlds.
This was I loved this.
What a joy this show is, and Ryan should watch it.
I think Ryan would like.
Oh, this. John, tell Ryan to watch Star Trek: Strange New Worlds.
Watch Star Trek: Strange New Worlds.
Okay.
So. In season two of Discovery, the Enterprise showed up, and this was captained by Captain Pike, which, if you're familiar with kind of Star Trek in general, when the original series came out, there was a pilot called The Cage, which featured...
Not Nick.
That's right. We'll get to him later. Which featured Captain Christopher Pike and his first officer, who he just called Number One. And his science officer, Spock, and apparently, I thought The Cage was pretty good, but I think for the time in the 60s, they thought, the criticism was it was too cerebral. They wanted more of an adventure show. But so, kind of unheard of, still to this day, they gave Gene Roddenberry a second bite at the apple, and they said, make a second pilot, and that's where we got William Shatner and everything, but... they actually used a lot of the footage from that failed pilot in a two-parter. Involving Captain Christopher Pike, and in the J.J. Abrams reboot, Bruce Greenwood played Captain Pike. So apparently, when Anson Mount played him in Discovery, it was received so well they did a spinoff about Pike's adventures with being captain of the Enterprise, and this show really gets back to basics when it comes to Star Trek. It's very optimistic.
It's self-contained.
That's right. Like, every episode, you don't have to watch one episode to watch the next. But, I don't know, the way Anson Mount plays Captain Pike, because without giving too much away, I'm getting too much into mythology, something happens to him in Star Trek, in Discovery, where he kind of gets a glimpse into his future. And, I don't know, just that, he's kind of haunted when the show starts, but then eventually he just says, oh, what the hell, it's going to happen, I might as well just have fun with it. And this show is just so delightful. I had a grin from ear to ear from the beginning at the end. Like, the guy Ethan Peck that plays Spock, I thought he was great. Rebecca Romijn plays Number One. It's just, this show, I can't say enough good things. It's just so optimistic and so joyful, and it's just, it's back to, like, them exploring, and Strange New Worlds is the perfect title for it, and it's just, yeah. I love this show.
We'll do a 3-episode rule on this one when we get a couple of episodes in.
Yeah, we'll revisit this, but very impressed with the beginning of Strange New Worlds.
So it got away from us again this week, guys, and we have an episode that's a little bit longer than one episode can contain. So join us next week for part two of this episode, where we'll talk about all the films that we saw over the past week. See you soon. Thank you.